98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
It's the place you go where you want to know what's going on in the world of sports. We call it the 4 o'clock reset here on the Burns and Gambo show. We pack in all of the top stories into one spot. 4 o'clock segment, we run through it as quick as we possibly can to get as much information out as we possibly can. We start with college football. The athletic director for USC has made it official. Quote, "I am pleased to let you know Coach Helton will continue to be our head coach. His commitment to our student athletes and to leading with integrity is vital to restoring our championship program, which is the goal for all of our teams," close quote.
Yeah, listen, they were 8-4 overall. They went 7-2 in the Pac-12. They're going to play in either the Alamo Bowl or the Holiday Bowl. He did a good job for them. I mean, he did a pretty good job. So the report, those premature reports that he was going to get fired, completely wrong. Yeah. They're keeping him.
Reports are coming out that the bottom line, and this is going to sound familiar if you're an Arizona Wildcat fan, money was a huge factor in the decision-making process at USC. Not just the Helton buyout, but the cost of hiring his replacements.
How much it would have been?
They just don't have that money right now. Apparently, they're paying a lot of money for stuff outside the football staff right now. And so they don't have the money to go get an Urban Meyer. They don't have the money to be able to pay out Helton and do all that stuff at the same time. I mean, tough times, I guess, for USC.
That rowing team with all of those, you know, actresses' daughters on it, I mean, that's an expensive team.
No doubt.
I mean, that is one of the top rowing teams in, like, Southern California.
No
I mean, Lori Loughlin's kid. I mean, how much does that cost to have that rowing team as part of your program?
The Hot Stove League is starting to warm up. Zach Wheeler, 5-year deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. He gets $118 million. Cole Hamels, 1-year deal with the Atlanta Braves worth $18 million.
Well, you look at the Phillies, right? I mean, they spent all that money on Bryce Harper and didn't get to the playoffs. They've got Aaron Nola, who's really good. Arrieta's too old. But now you team Nola with Zach Wheeler, and you've got a pretty good 1-2 punch there if you're Philadelphia Phillies. So that was a good move for the Phillies. Remember last year they wanted Corbin, but they wouldn't guarantee the 6th year for Corbin. The Nationals did, and they got him. But they made a good offer for Wheeler. He had a breakthrough season a couple of years ago. He's been very good for the Mets, and that's a good signing for the Phillies.
Robbie Ray rumors are starting to heat up a little bit as well. There was a piece a day or so ago about the Astros maybe being interested. There was a story this morning on ESPN.com in which they suggested one blockbuster trade per team, and their blockbuster had Robbie Ray going to the Yankees for outfielder Clint Frazier.
But it makes no sense for the Yankees with all the control that they have at Clint Frazier. Go get a guy with 1 year. The Yankees are very much in line to get one of the two major pitchers, either Strasburg or Gerrit Cole. I think they've already said that money's not an object when it comes to Gerrit Cole. So I think there's a good chance that they'll get him. They've still got Tanaka. They've still got Paxton. But those guys will be free agents. If they added Robbie Ray, you'd have three pitchers that will be free agents after next year. So I don't know that deal makes a lot of sense. But I do think that the Diamondbacks are going to trade Robbie
Ray.
Along
those lines, John Heyman is reporting the Angels have met with Gerrit Cole and that the Dodgers have been courting all three megastar free agents so far this offseason. Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, and Anthony Rendon. Also, John Morosi of MLB Network, MLB.com, tweeted out the Diamondbacks have shown some interest in Nicholas Castellanos, outfielder with the Cubs last year.
Yeah, the only problem with that is, and the Diamondbacks are going to show a lot of interest in a lot of places just to see what's out there. He's a Scott Boras client. And Scott Boras thinks that this guy, after the 2 months that he had with the Cubs, is going to the Hall of Fame. So he's going to want him to get paid a lot of money. So I won't rule it out, but I think it's unlikely that the Diamondbacks could get him because of what that price tag is going to be from Boras.
Coyotes beat the Blue Jackets last night 4-2. Shane Doan today says it's very important for the Coyotes to bank these points as they're one game out of the divisional lead.
They keep getting points and points. Hey, they count the same in November and December as they do in April. And it's so important to be getting these points and banking them and giving yourself a legitimate shot at being one of the teams to be there in the end.
Next up for the Coyotes, at Philly tomorrow, then at Pittsburgh on Friday.
The return of Phil Kessel.
At Chicago on Sunday. Busy time for the Coyotes.
Yeah,
right
that'll
now.
Friday will be Phil Kessel's return to the Pittsburgh Penguins will be a very emotional for him. He's really struggling this year with the Coyotes. He's not playing very well. He only has 4 goals. He's projected to have like 42 points. But that will be an emotional return for him to go back to Pittsburgh.
Phoenix Suns just made it official. Ricky Rubio will start tonight against the Orlando Magic, a game that starts at 5 o'clock this evening. So with Rubio a go, Monty Williams today said it's also going to be good to have Cheick Diallo back. Aaron Baines has been ruled out yet again.
This Baines thing is starting to worry me, you know, just because of how many games that he's missed. He had nagging injuries last year. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. He's had some nagging injuries, you know, last year when he was in Boston. He's just not a guy that's used to playing as many minutes as the Suns were putting on him earlier in the season.
Yeah. But our main story of the day today comes to us from the Arizona Cardinals, where today Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray met with the media coming off of clearly, by far, the most embarrassing, humiliating loss suffered of the season, 34-7 against the LA Rams over the weekend. The Cardinals had shown a level of competitiveness in just about every game they had played this year, and certainly the portions of non-competitiveness were limited to just a quarter here or a half there. All of it has Kyler Murray on edge this week, according to his coach.
He's continuing to try and get better. He's competitive. I can see this week he's definitely on edge and wants to play better. All of us do. We didn't coach well, didn't play well, and he's definitely going to practice really well this week, and I expect him to play well.
Gambo, Kyler Murray went a little bit further in describing his state after that Rams game.
Yeah, it's just a disgusting feeling, you know. I'm sure you were disgusted watching it. You know, I was disgusted being in it, so it's just, you know, it's not a good feeling that, you know, you just don't want to, you know, have that anymore. So just try your hardest not to allow that to happen again.
I love hearing that from him. I mean, the kid's got heart. He's got character. Played a terrible game. Listen, and going back and watching the game film and going over all the plays with Kyler Murray, the play design was fine. You know, they weren't, the routes were good. It was Kyler. I mean, Kyler missed so many open receivers. There were plays that were on that field for him to make, and he didn't make it. I think he might have been worried about the pass rush, but he wasn't recognizing the safety. He wasn't identifying the safety and what he was doing. I mean, it was one play where he had trips right, and he only had two defenders to the right, and he didn't recognize that and get the ball. Like, he just made the wrong decisions throughout that game. But in going back and looking at the game tape, yeah, the routes were good. The play design was good. Cliff's calls, everything was fine. The receivers are running good routes. The play calls were good. The design was good. It was Kyler. I mean, it was Kyler. Kyler just had a bad game.
He backed that up with what he said today when he met with the media. A couple of sound bites that back up exactly what you're saying here. Kyler Murray could have been more relaxed in the pocket against LA.
Yeah, I mean, I said it after the game. I think I should have. I definitely could have been, you know, done a better job of being more relaxed in the pocket and just trusting it and allowing things to develop downfield.
And admitted, yeah, I had open guys and I missed them, like Christian Kirk.
Yeah, there was a couple of times, I mean, watching the tape where, you know, I was kind of just disgusted at the fact that, you know, we, you know, the couple of times where I did have time, he had chances at big plays, and me being unsettled, you know, just didn't get to him. So, it's tough, but we just got to move on and hope you get better.
He's got to recognize defenses, and that's what he didn't do against the Rams. Whether they disguised it well or not, it's not like the Rams brought this great defense and they shouldn't have dominated that game, because there were plays that were there, and it wasn't like the pass rush was in his face the entire game. You know, I know he got sacked a bunch, but there were times when he had time to throw the ball and he just didn't identify the right guy to throw it to.
I'm not going to use the word spoiled, although it might be the right word to use. I'm not going to use it. Kyler Murray, though, while he hasn't spoiled us, he certainly has played at a level that is not typically associated with a rookie quarterback in this league. And I think because of that, we came to expect a different level from Kyler Murray. We have to remember, and I think Sunday was a good reminder, he's a 22-year-old rookie quarterback in the NFL.
He's got a bad day.
That's hard.
Gonna make mistakes.
He hasn't had too many moments like he had. He's had moments within games, but he certainly hasn't had games like he had Sunday against the LA Rams. And when you remind yourself, and I know it's easy to forget given the season that he's had, when you remind yourself this is a 22-year-old rookie quarterback, you can at least understand, yeah, he's going to miss open guys. Yeah, he's going to get a little rattled in the pocket and move his feet around and not do things that veteran quarterbacks who have been around for 7 years. But the body of work that Kyler has done up until this point has given him a lot of equity to make mistakes like that in terms of our level to forgive him.
No doubt. Yeah, listen, I can, like I said, with the game, I think it's an outlier. I think. because the defense has been garbage all year. The offense usually plays better than that. So he had a bad game. He had a bad day. I'm okay. I think we all want to see how they respond to Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh blows them out by four touchdowns, you know, and the offense doesn't get going again. Like, okay, then I might have a concern. But we'll just say that this was an outlier. Give Kyler an opportunity. I like the fact that he's mad. I like the fact that he's pissed off. I like the fact that he hated watching the tape. Because the kid wants to be great.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell that. He's not nonchalant about it. He's mad that he played so poorly.
Cornhole Cup, it's almost here. Text the word cornhole to 620-620 to compete in this year's Arizona Sports Cornhole Cup on Sunday, December 22nd at Casino Arizona Field. That's the home of the Phoenix Rising FC. Over $2,000 in cash prizes. Proceeds will benefit Sanderson Ford's Operation Santa Claus. Text cornhole to 620-620 right now to compete. The Phoenix Suns going to look to get a win tonight in Orlando without a full roster yet again. The lack of help might be taking a toll on their best player, and we'll explain how next on the Burns and Gambo Show. 5 o'clock tip time tonight. You'll hear it on ESPN 620, but as always, we encourage you to keep it here as well, because I promise you, we'll keep you completely updated on the Suns taking on the Orlando Magic.
Suns are taking on who?
The Orlando Magic.
And what does that mean for the Magic?
Bad news for the Magic!
Bad news for the Magic!
Wasn't bad news for Josh Jackson last night, by the way.
How did he look, Jordan?
He looked all right.
How did he look?
I mean, in all honesty,
he should have dominated that game.
He was a few numbers away from a triple-double, but that's exactly my point. He should be having a triple-double every single game in the G League.
He's like the fourth pick in the draft, right? What was he?
Yeah, fourth pick.
Fourth pick in the draft.
He went scoreless, I think, in the third quarter.
Oh, my goodness.
Jordan, our producer, is also the voice of the Northern Arizona Suns and had the pleasure of calling the NAZ Suns and the Memphis Hustle last night.
Do the hustle.
And we get another one tomorrow. They're still in town.
Oh, wow. So Josh Jackson has, 26 points at 6 3-pointers, I think?
Yeah. I mean, he had good numbers.
Yeah, but he should have good numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the
but
best
he didn't
part,
dominate.
There was about 4 or 5 people that were giving him a little bit of business from the crowd. And at one point, he looked over, and it looked like he mouthed something to those guys, but I'm not quite sure what it was.
Oh, handcuffs. Handcuffs.
Oh, man.
Handcuffs.
Is that what they were saying?
Well, no, I'm just kidding.
They were probably asking if James Jones was going to come and buy them free beer.
I was going to say, there are so many things you could chant at Josh Jackson.
I don't miss
him. It's hard to know which one to pick.
I don't miss him.
There's a deep well to pick from.
Yes.
Good riddance.
Free beer. Free beer.
Throw up.
I was gonna say.
Throw up. Oh. All over the Suns practice court.
Well, see, no, it doesn't work. You've got too many syllables in there. You just gotta keep it simple. Yeah. Did you have a suggestion, sir?
Flame out.
Yes.
Keep it nice and simple.
Kyrie.
Many options.
Kyrie.
many options. Oh, well. It's neither here nor there. Yes, the Suns and the Orlando Magic, and it might be bad news for the Orlando Magic.
Bad news for the Magic.
The Phoenix Suns, you do wonder. Boy, there has been so much that has worn on Devin Booker the last few years. I don't know if this stretch has worn on Devin Booker or not, but they need their reinforcements. Baines isn't going to play again tonight. DeAndre Ayton is still a couple weeks away from returning. Ricky Rubio will play. He's been announced as a member of the starting lineup tonight. So he's in, and he's good to go. But this full complement of guys that we got to see on just one night, this roster has been at its fullest only one night all season. I do wonder, too, how much of that is leading to Devin Booker's, I don't want to say struggles, but he has been struggling, especially from the three-point line the last few games. He's not been the same guy the last few games.
Because he can't do it all by himself. I mean, this is not a knock on him. He just needs help. Devin Booker is not a top 20 player in the NBA. Sorry, Suns fans, he's not. I like him. I'm a big fan. He's a great player. He's a great player. Not a top 20 player in the NBA. So everybody expects him to be able to, you know, to dominate that. You know, top 10 players do that, right? Top 5, top 10 players can take a team on their back and carry him. That's not Devin Booker. He's the focus of all these other teams' defenses. He just can't get open. I mean, you know, you if you're defending him, you try not to go under the screens. You go over the top. When he's trying to post up, you take mismatches. You take the ball out of his hands. The teams are defending him. They'd much rather have other guys taking shots than Devin Booker.
Yeah.
His open looks are all predicated on the players he plays with. Not the plays that are being called for him, but the players he plays with. So don't knock Devin Booker. I mean, he's not as good as LeBron. He's not Harden. There's only a handful of guys in the league that are like that. But he is a young, great player. He just needs to be surrounded with more talent.
Before you get a bunch of angry tweets, you still think he could be one of those guys, right?
Yeah, I'm a Booker fan.
That eventually I mean, he's not among the elite in the NBA.
No,
but, man,
no.
I still think he's very much on his way.
I think I did this and I sent it to you in an email. We never talked about it. I am somewhere around the 21st, 22nd, 23rd best player in the NBA, which isn't bad. But that's not top five. That's not top 10. Booker need, and there's nothing wrong with Booker needing, you know, they got help this year for them to be competitive and to win some games. But they still need, and maybe it's DeAndre Ayton. I mean, it could be DeAndre, if not him, somebody else, to take more of the load off of Booker so that way he can get open looks.
Yeah, and when DeAndre gets back, you would expect that's going to help out a whole bunch of things.
A whole bunch.
It's this Aaron Bain situation. He's out again tonight. And look, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. We painted this picture of this guy in Aaron Baines, who's a very good player, obviously, who became a real popular hit with Suns fans right out of the gates because he was that alternative to DeAndre Ayton when he was suspended. The problem was, I think Baines is now paying like a credit card with the way he was playing earlier in the year, because he is averaging about 8 minutes more per game than he ever has anywhere in his career.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he was only getting about 15 minutes per game in most every other of his stops that he's been at, and I think you're starting to see him pay the price for those minutes he played earlier this season.
No, there's no question. I mean, even in Boston last year, I mean, his body broke down some. He was limited. He had a broken hand. He had some foot issues. He had some other stuff that he was hurt with. He missed a long stretch. He's not a guy that you rely night in, night out. I mean, he's being asked to do something now that he's never done before in his entire career. Be a starting center and play 25 to 30 minutes a game. Now, that's just until DeAndre Ayton gets back. But what this has done, I mean, it's all the thought when Ayton was out and Baines was killing it, it was like, oh, who do you start at center? When, you know, Baines is showing you that he, because of the injuries, it's Ayton. Ayton's your guy. Ayton's your guy. Baines needs to be the backup. Play him 20 minutes a game. Play him 20 minutes a game. He's a really good backup player, but he's 32 years old. He can't dribble. He can't pass. He's not a fluid offensive player. He's good at what he does. He's a good player, but he needs to be limited to 15, 20 minutes a game. These extra minutes have taken a little bit of a toll on him.
We talked about this yesterday. It's obvious that Aaron Baines is a real good glue player, right? He's the kind of guy that you like to have on a bench. He's the kind of guy that you like to have on a team playing. He's the kind of guy that you like to have as a backup. He just got a little overextended. And with him missing, now the problem with missing tonight is, okay, you can say bad news for the Magic all you want. They're not very good. They've only got one win all year against a team that was above 500 when they played them. But what they do have is a pretty imposing front line. They can't shoot very well. They're one of the worst offensive teams in the NBA. But they do have a front line that is big, tall, long, lanky, and the Suns are going to start Frank Kaminsky at center tonight. and that's where you are and what you hope and what I believe is the Suns still have enough overall talent, more talent than the Orlando Magic, that they should be able to win tonight. But man, that matchup in the front court makes me nervous tonight because
sure.
Frank Kaminsky has the potential to give up 60 points in the paint tonight for the Suns.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, you'd like to win this game because then you finish this second block of 10 games at 4-6, right? Orlando's a game that you feel, I mean, at 9-11, they played last night on a back-to-back. They're 1-4. On back-to-backs. They don't play well on those back-to-backs. They did win last night. Maybe a little bit of a letdown today, but this is a game you figured the Suns, you know, could have a chance to win. I mean, Orlando's not god-awful. If Fournier's a good player, they've got some talent on that team, but you're going to have to play... You're going to have to play hard. You're going to have to play well to beat that team.
The Hot Stove League really cooking today with a couple of big moves and a few rumors about your Arizona Diamondbacks. The Grim Reaper, John Gambadoro, will show up and take a hood and a sickle to some of your greatest dreams next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. Sarah Cazell is here, and it's a Diamondback-themed question today.
Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll Update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
It's your red hot Robbie Ray trade rumors, because they are all over the place. One about him going to the Astros, one on ESPN, more of a suggestion than a rumor, suggesting a blockbuster, one blockbuster move for every team this offseason, and theirs for the Diamondbacks was to trade Robbie Ray to the Yankees for Clint Frazier. So Ray kind of out there in the news a little bit, and that's kind of why we're going poll question on it today.
Exactly. So with those rumors starting to heat up around him, if the Diamondbacks do indeed decide to trade Robbie Ray away, what would you want the main piece that comes back to Arizona to be? Do you want it to be a right fielder or an outfielder? And another starting pitcher in place of Robbie Ray, bullpen help, or a second baseman?
Outfielder. Outfielder. I'm really worried about the outfield right now, right? I mean, you could put Marte in center now, okay, but then you got a problem at second. But I think they prefer Marte at second, which means they need a center fielder and they need a right fielder.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Jackie Bradley yesterday.
They're very interested in Jackie Bradley.
As a center fielder, obviously.
Yeah, very interested. Now, he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's about $11 million. So I think you'd probably – and Boston wants to trade him. They're trying to cut salary. He's the best defensive center fielder in baseball, inconsistent hitter. But, yeah, I expect the Diamondbacks to see if they can get him. I'm not saying they can, but I expect them to try to get
him. He's got 1 year left, I believe, of arbitration. You mentioned $11 million. The belief is the Diamondbacks will have about $30 million to spend this offseason. So what are the listeners saying so far on this?
All right, our voters, 40% of them think that the D-backs should go for another starting pitcher to replace Robbie Ray. 33% would like a right fielder. 22% say they want help with the bullpen. Only 5% voted for a second baseman.
Outfield. Yeah. I think you're dealing Robbie Ray because you have a lot of starting pitching. You obviously don't have a one or a two, but I don't think you're going to get a one or a two for Robbie Ray. So I do it to get an outfielder. You got the Robbie Ray rumors, which are into, we were talking about this earlier, and you had suggested there probably is not an intention to sign Robbie Ray beyond this, his final year of arbitration. And if there's not that, then why hold on to Robbie Ray as long as you don't need him in your rotation? And I don't think you do.
No, I don't think you do. Ideally, he's the best starting pitcher you have right now. I mean, he is. Even if he's a five inning pitcher, he's the most proven. He's got the most experience.
That's
outside
fair.
A leak.
Yeah,
he's probably your best guy. Like if you were playing a playoff game today, you would say, "Give me Robbie Ray for five innings," because he's got the ability to shut somebody down.
But would you feel great about that? Would you feel great about got a playoff game today and you got to win? Who are you going to start? Would you feel great about your chances of winning that game?
No.
I wouldn't feel great about it.
No, not at all. Listen, one of the reasons I think they're going to trade him is I'm hearing nothing on them re-signing him. Now, you got to see, the Diamondbacks, this is how they work. That when they get to the offseason, that's when they negotiate with players and try to get deals done. Now, it doesn't have to be, November, December. It could be January. To get a deal done with somebody. But if you're trying to keep Robbie Ray, you're working on an extension with him right now. The fact that you've heard his name in rumors, the fact that I'm not hearing or anybody else is hearing anything about the Diamondbacks talking with Robbie Ray on an extension makes me believe that they're going to trade him. Because because the Diamondbacks don't want to go into next year with Robbie Ray and lose him for nothing. You could trade him at the deadline, but you get less. So I think that leads to a trade. I'm more of the belief that they will trade Robbie Ray.
Yeah.
That they don't have to, but I believe that they're going to try to.
No, and you're right. I don't want to make it sound like, Robbie Ray is completely disposable. Just get rid of him. I just think that Robbie Ray is the best pitcher on a staff filled with a bunch of number threes. Now, maybe Zach Gallen elevates himself to a number two one of these days, but you've got a whole bunch of threes to choose from, and I just don't think you need to prioritize keeping Robbie Ray when you've got that kind of depth. No, you don't have a one. No, you don't have a two, but I got eight threes, and with that in mind, I can move one or two of them, like the Taiwan Walker deal the other day. I had no problem with them not tendering him. He's
risky.
Very risky.
Risky for that money.
Yep, very risky. What they do need is some pop in the outfield. And the Jackie Bradley suggestion aside, which I do like. I like Jackie Bradley quite a bit. And $11 million, that still gives him another 19 or so to play with this offseason. Nicholas Castellanos is a name that has come up associated with the Diamondbacks, and kind of similar to Marcell Ozuna a couple of weeks ago, where you look at the numbers and you go, oh yeah, he would fit. He would look good in right field. He would provide some production. But just like with Ozuna, the problem with Castellanos is he is going to be expensive.
Well, because and that's why I think it's unlikely. I don't expect Ozuna to be here either. I don't think Ozuna is the guy for the Diamondbacks. So I'm going to say no to Ozuna, and I don't think they're going to get Castellanos either. I think it's unlikely. I don't want to rule it out completely, but I think it's unlikely that they get him. Good player for the last 2 months with Chicago. He's a Boris client.
That's the key.
He's a Scott Boras client, and Scott Boras thinks the guy's going to the Hall of Fame, so he wants him to get paid like a primetime players. So right now, presently, no. I don't see Castellanos coming to the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think his agent, Scott Boras, is going to want way too much money for him.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
Look at that. Somebody mark the time at 4:38 in the afternoon. Gambo killed your dream.
Yep.
Killed it dead.
If you wanted Nick Castellanos, right now it is unlikely that they can get him. Too pricey. Just too pricey. Price would have to come down.
Kill
teams
that
would have
dream,
to drop
Gambo.
Out.
Kill it.
But as long as this team's interested, I think he's too pricey for Arizona.
The Grim Gambo showing up for work today. Hood and sickle included. The report came from John Morosi of MLB.com, who said that the Giants are showing interest. The Cubs have shown interest.
Cubs want him back.
And the Diamondbacks have also shown some interest. But again, that can mean one phone call from Mike Hazen to Scott Boras. Hey, what are you guys thinking? Okay, thanks. Just checking in. Hey, and then Scott Boras calls John Morosi and says, the Diamondbacks have shown interest.
Well, you know what happens a lot of times?
Maybe.
You know, if the price tag comes down from what Boras is seeking. But right now, from what I'm hearing, he wants. And right now, it's unlikely that he would. I want to rule it out completely, but I will say it's unlikely.
In a perfect world, his numbers with the Cubs were good.
Oh yeah, for 2 months he was unbelievable.
For 212 at bats, 51 games, he hit .321 with 16 homers and OPS over 1,000. He is great. And he's going to parlay that into a whole lot of money. Speaking of a whole lot of money, here's Jeff Passan today. Baseball insider for ESPN. He was on SportsCenter. Zach Wheeler got a 5-year, $118 million deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. And Passan thinks that the Wheeler deal is a sign that maybe free agency in baseball is going back to normal. Here's what he said.
More than anything, I think it says maybe, just maybe, we're getting back to free agency as it once was. Yasmani Grandal getting $73 million. Mike Moustakas getting $64 million. And now Zach Wheeler, a guy who has been really good at times, but has never been great, getting $118 million from the Phillies because they are banking on there being more there with him.
Now that's an interesting thought, because you remember last year, baseball free agency was as clunky as a car that's been parked in the snow for 2 weeks, right? And you got to let it warm up a little bit. Nobody was getting paid. Nobody was getting contracts. Nobody was getting nothing. And everybody was pissed about it.
Well, even 2 years ago, J.D. Martinez,
right?
J.D.
Right.
Martinez 2 years ago.
Players were just sitting around like, hey, are you going to sign guys or what?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a whole.
Last year was Dallas Keuchel.
There was a whole.
Kimbrel, Dallas Keuchel hadn't been signed.
And they started the season not signed.
Not signed.
They started. Passan is suggesting that the Wheeler signing with Philly is an indication that maybe things are going back to normal.
What's that average? 25? A year?
5 and 118?
Less than 25. Like 23.
Yeah, 23.
23 and a half, somewhere like that. Okay.
Still a decent chunk of change for Zach Wheeler.
He's a good pitcher. I mean, yeah, he was really good for the Mets these last couple of years. 2018, 19. I mean, I like him. And the Phillies need a number two behind Aaron Nola. Because Arrieta's not that guy, and some of the younger guys hadn't worked out. So now I still think the big guy is going to get paid, and that's Garrett Cole and Steven Strasburg. The two big guys, they're going to get them. They're going to get money. They're going to get astronomical money.
Yeah, and when it comes to that, by the way, I saw a couple of notes today. I want to pass this along from the baseball hot stove. The L.A. Dodgers have been courting all three of the megastar free agents so far this offseason. Garrett Cole, Steven Strasburg, Anthony Rendon, though the Rendon situation is interesting given they have Justin Turner there. I'm not sure why they'd be courting a third baseman when they've got a pretty good one. The Angels have also met with Garrett Cole. And it seems like, and you would know this because you're a Yankees fan, seems like with Garrett Cole, he's kind of got that CC Sabathia thing going on where, if you remember, years ago, Sabathia was kind of a West Coast guy, wanted to stay on the West Coast, and some team was going to have to dramatically overpay him to get him to be an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
Garrett Cole is kind of seen in the same light. Like, if you're an East Coast team, you better be prepared to pay for the fact that you are on the wrong coast, because he wants to be on the left coast, not on the right coast.
One thing about the Justin Turner-Rendon thing, Turner's 35.
Yeah.
Rendon's 29. So I like Turner, but he's 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So they could decide that they just want a younger, better player.
Yeah, it's very true. There are multiple teams still making a claim for a spot in the college football playoff. Is the Pac-12 going to be able to stay out of its own way this weekend? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Oh, Paul Feinbaum. What would we do without you?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. He said this morning on Golic and Wingo. It doesn't matter who the fourth playoff team is. They're going to get blown out by an SEC team, because of course they are.
The number four team is going to get blown out in the semifinals, so it really doesn't matter who it is. If it's Oklahoma, you at least have a program that's now will have beaten the number seven team in Baylor. I think that's fairly significant. It does seem like there's some gerrymandering going on with this committee to make the Big 12 look a little bit better. Utah, I've got to see the games Friday night against Oregon. I've seen them a couple of times this year, and they're an impressive team against rather average competition.
I mean, the competition has been rather average.
It has been. What's wrong with that?
But Utah has. Well, I was thinking that there was another cut.
Are they going to get blown out?
That there was another cut in which he said America, and I don't know if I've got it or not, but I know I don't have that one. Okay. In which he said America does not want to see Utah in the
Final
Four.
Tough.
That was what I was hoping he was going to say at the end there.
America doesn't want. Put the four best teams in. America will take that.
Sure.
Listen, Oklahoma Sooner fans aren't going to be happy if it's Oklahoma. They're not going to be happy. Does the rest of the country like care that much? Or it should be over Oklahoma or Utah? Do they really care that much? I mean, Oklahoma's a great brand. I get it. I understand. It's a great brand. It's a big name. But you'll have LSU in there. You'll have Ohio State in there.
Sure.
You'll have one of the more dominant programs in the last few years in Clemson in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying you throw in Utah a bone. If they get in, they get in because they deserved it. Now, I tend to think like you do. Like, if Oklahoma beats Baylor, they're going to get, you know, I think, and they're going to get in. I mean, it's a better win. I think it's a better win. Oklahoma over Baylor rather than Utah over Oregon, I think it's just a better win. But I don't know. I mean, if they're going to take other things into consideration. If they take, Utah was missing one of their best players when they lost to USC. USC was a good team this year. That's not a terrible loss by Utah.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you said that. Because I said this yesterday. I don't think it's going to come down just to the Big 12 championship and nothing else. I think what I need to know, and what I don't know for sure, what I need to know is, how much does the committee value Utah and the eye test that they passed? There's no doubt. Here's what I will say. The resume belonging to Oklahoma and the resume belonging to Baylor is going to be better than Utah's resume.
Yes.
Okay? Because they'll have wins against each other. They'll have more better wins, for lack of a better way of putting it. Baylor's non-conference sucks. I mean, so does Utah's. I think Baylor's is even worse. But Baylor's resume, side by side against Utah, looks about the same, if not a little bit better. I think what Utah's advantage is that the eye test, man, they're kicking teams' butts every single Saturday. And they're doing it with a defense that Baylor doesn't have. And they're doing it with a defense that Oklahoma doesn't have. And they're doing it with a balance on offense and defense that suggests that they're the better. They might not have the better resume, but that they are the better team and the one befitting that fourth spot. I will tell you this, Rob Mullins, the chairman, the committee chairman, pointed out yesterday during the broadcast, as he has on a couple of occasions, let's not forget that Utah was missing Zach Moss when they lost their one and only game. The committee is very, very aware of the circumstances surrounding
sure.
Utah's loss to USC, and it sounds like they're giving them extra credit because of that. And if that's the case, even though Baylor or Oklahoma's win might be better than Utah's win, Utah might be so much more highly regarded by the committee, it might not matter. they might get in anyway as long as they beat Oregon.
You know, that's the question. As long as they beat Oregon. Now, we had Brock Hewitt on early, and he thought that they would beat Oregon.
Can I play this soundbite here for you?
Go ahead.
Yeah, here
I do think Utah is going to handle Oregon Friday night. That Utah team, I kind of said this from the beginning of the year, that both Oregon and Utah were built for this season. They were senior-laden teams, lots of experience in all the right spots. I think Tyler Huntley is an incredible college quarterback. That triumvirate from Florida that's finally graduated, it feels like they've been in Salt Lake for like 15 years. So you know, those guys on the offensive side are going to move on, and they got seven seniors, and I think six of those dudes are all going to be playing in the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So they are built, and they were built for this season.
You asked him point blank if you had $10 neutral field to bet Utah versus Oklahoma. He said, "I would bet on Utah."
You bet on Utah. I'm rooting for Utah. I want them to get in. I want them to play in that game. Pac-12. It's a great state, good people. I want to see them get in. And it's nice. Listen, I think Oklahoma's a brand, and I get it, and it'll help sell more and bring more attention, because Oklahoma's a much bigger brand than Utah, much bigger brand. But, you know, every once in a while, you got to give a team like Utah a chance, right, if you feel like they deserve it. I mean, you can't give Oklahoma the edge on brand. Can't be that. You got to think they're the better football team.
Yeah.
And their resume's better. Then, okay, I'll buy it. But the brand thing shouldn't matter. You know, this isn't about who's the biggest brand. It's about who's the best team.
Well, you know what? And when it comes to that, Paul Feinbaum, again, I'll go back to him on Golic and Wingo. He doesn't even think Utah should get in over Baylor.
I realize where I am and in my constituency here of one, but I just love the story. And I know that has nothing to do with what we're talking about here, but that would be a significant accomplishment, I think. And I know Baylor has some deficiencies in its schedule, but I still would take Baylor over Oklahoma as opposed to Utah over an Oregon team, which has been devalued significantly.
I'll tell you what. You know, I made that bet with you a couple weeks ago, the four things that had to happen for Utah and Oregon to meet in the Pac-12. And I said I was betting on the Pac-12 doing Pac-12 things. And sure enough, ASU beat Oregon and screwed it all up, right? I'm doubling down on that. I think Oregon beats Utah on Friday night, and it doesn't matter. I think Oregon's going to beat Utah on Friday. I respect the heck out of Brock Heward. It's not so much a bet against Utah or even a bet for Oregon. It's a bet on the Pac-12 doing Pac-12 things. And the most Pac-12-y thing to happen would be for Oregon to beat Utah, and it's just not going to matter. It's going to come down to the winner of the Big 12 championship.
I wouldn't make a bet with you on that, man. Oregon's playing for a chance to go to the Rose Bowl. I mean, you're playing for something big still if you're Oregon.
Big.
You're playing for a good chance to go to the Rose Bowl.
Yep, big.
You win that game, you're in the Rose Bowl. Like, that's a big game.
By the way, the bowl projections for ASU.
Yeah, you saw three of them, right?
I saw three of them, and they are all over the map after last night's college football playoff reveal show, right, with the latest standings. I have got Stuart Mandel, who is with The Athletic. He still says it's going to be the Sun Bowl for ASU against Wake Forest. But then on ESPN, it gets all over the map because one of ESPN's predictors has Utah in the Final Four and the other doesn't. So because of that, they've got a lot of shifting around. One of them has its Bonagura, has ASU in the Holiday Bowl against Iowa. The other, Schlabaugh, has ASU in the Vegas Bowl against Boise State.
Big difference, huh?
Huge.
Huge difference. The Holiday Bowl or the Vegas Bowl?
Huge. Versus Iowa or versus Boise State?
Didn't we see a Sun Bowl last week? We saw a Sun Bowl.
We saw both of these guys pick Sun Bowl last week.
And now one's Holiday and one's Vegas.
Both Bonagura and Schlabaugh said Sun Bowl last week. But after last night's the college football playoff selection show, which again wasn't the final show, obviously, they both changed their predictions. And now I got a Holiday Bowl and I've got a Vegas Bowl. Oh, the Vegas Bowl would just...
Yeah. Listen, they didn't have a great year. Like, you know, you're hoping at this point next year you're looking at one of the top three bowl games.
I'm hoping this time.
You're hoping this time next year you're a top three team.
I'm hoping this time next year they're playing for a Rose Bowl. I'm going to say it like it is. I mean, Utah's going to lose all those guys this time next year.
Utah's quarterback, Oregon's quarterback.
I want to be preempted on Friday night this time a year from now for the Pac-12 championship game featuring ASU versus whomever, Washington, Oregon, Stanford. That's what I want to see. I think anything short of that, I'm going to be disappointed.
Your competition next year may very well be USC.
Yeah, they brought back Clay Helton, so I feel a whole lot better about that.
Weren't they up 28-7 over ASU in about 10 minutes?
They were. It's the biggest question of the Cardinals' offseason. There are ramifications for whatever decision is made. Michael Bidwell's got three choices. Which one will he choose? That's coming up next in the Burns and Gambo Show.